in Iraq, Afghanistan, and military bases around the world. They'll stuff them full of things that most of us take for granted, but that our troops don't often have. Things like toiletries, playing cards, candy, books, little things. Little things that carry an enormous message to our troops. Little things like thank you, like we'll never forget you, like we're behind you 100%, like we love and cherish each and every one of you. Little things. We're all about the little things. We're the USO. So are you. For more information and to find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
What do you want from the Wizard of Oz?
Just messing with you. But seriously, people don't want to stand in front of my big, awesome wizard head and hear me going, duh. They want answers. That's why I go to USA.gov, the official source for government info. It gives me the smarts to go with the show. Say someone asks for a brain. I go to USA.gov, type in student loans, and 4 years later, they're chock full of knowledge. Is the Wicked Witch terrorizing your neighborhood? Well, move. Then search USA.gov for change of address form so your friends can find you and the witch can't. How about if you're stuck here from Kansas and want to go home? Well, check out USA.gov for the latest travel restrictions and passport applications. I even use it for myself. Bought my sweet ride at a government auction I found on USA.gov. I call it
the Wizmobile.
Balloons are for squares.
For federal and state government information, there's no place like USA.gov.
Hey, welcome back to the National Defense. This is Jerry Newberry. And, you know, we talk about a lot of things here, and we've mentioned in the past the contributions of women in the military, their sacrifice. And women, quite frankly, have come a long way. I might not be putting this the right way, but hopefully you'll know what I mean. Women have come a very long way, and deservedly so in today's society. And the military, as I view the military, has always been on the vanguard, so to speak, when it comes to social adjustments. Integration, for example, the military was really years ahead, miles ahead of the rest of America. And when it comes to women in the military, they followed suit. And, when I did my several embeds, I talked to a lot of women who were just performing magnificently in a variety of jobs. So we thought today we'd talk about women in the military, specifically women in the Army. And with us today to help me out with that is Lieutenant Colonel Catherine Ensworth. She's the branch chief, Women in the Army. How are you, Colonel?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Hey, thanks for being with us.
You bet.
As I mentioned, women have contributed to our military, to our country, in magnificent ways. And they've been doing it for a very long time. Can you kind of give us some background on women in the Army, kind of how it all started and how it's changed through the years?
Well, yeah, I'll be glad to do that. The reality is women have served in some fashion since the Revolutionary War. The first woman to actually receive a pension for service was Mary Corbett, and that was during the Civil War. And continually, it's just been a continual progression in terms of opportunities and outstanding service. In the early 1940s, We had what was called the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps. And a lot of women, which isn't a surprise, served as nurses. Some served in secretarial positions or communication positions. In 1948, they signed the one of the things President Truman signed that year was the integration of women into the Army, the Armed Forces Women's Integration Act. And that was when women were authorized full benefits and some of the ceilings were removed in terms of how far women could progress.
You mean to tell me that prior to that, women served in the military and didn't receive benefits?
They received benefits, but they didn't receive the same benefits as those who were serving in the regular Army, which really up till 1948 was men. We had the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, and then I believe it was 1942 or 1943, that progressed to the Women's Army Corps. And again, they received pay, but they didn't receive all the same benefits. And I can't list that for you, but in 1948, they were put on even ground in terms of benefits, the same benefits that the men that were serving in the regular Army received.
And why was that? Wasn't their work, their contributions considered equal to men's?
Well, I think if you look at our society, and you can see even in the civilian sector, it wasn't really till the World War II period where women were given the opportunity because the men were serving in the military where women stepped up in the civilian sector, in the industrial sector, the whole story of Rosie the Riveter.
Right.
It was a necessity that provided the opportunity and women excelled. And I think our military, although like you touched on when you started this piece, military has really been a front runner in terms of opportunity and diversity and those kinds of things. It's still a reflection of our society. And if you think of where we were in the 1940s, and even if you look at certain things today, the military is one place where we do have equal pay for equal work.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
But that wasn't the case. That wasn't the way it was in 1948. And you look at the way our Army is set up. Our Army is under civilian leadership, which is tied to those appointed positions. We're under the oversight of Congress, which is elected by constituents. So it all goes back to our society and where we are in our society and what the views of people in our society are. And even though we've been a front runner, we still had to contend with a lot of those same things that you do in the civilian sector in terms of valuing diversity, valuing the work of women. And so that was just one of many milestones.
Now, you mentioned equal pay for equal work, and you're absolutely right. Like I said, you took the words right out of my mouth. In the military, in the Army, women perform shoulder to shoulder with men, the same MOSs, the same jobs, and and rightfully so. They get paid equally. Now, as far as the jobs that women, that's come a long ways too, as you mentioned. One time, women were pretty much restricted to clerical jobs or as nurses. And now women perform almost all the jobs that men do, but there are still some restrictions, right?
There are some restrictions that are imposed by Congress. 20 years ago, about 52% of the jobs in the Army were open to women. Now that's 93%. Basically, the things that women are prohibited from serving in are those positions that have a primary mission of direct ground combat.
Infantry?
Infantry, armor, some of the field artillery, and special forces. That's the bulk of them.
Now, let me ask you this. So women are prevented from serving in infantry, armor, a couple of other jobs. Let me ask you this, Colonel. Is that because society in general, or is it because congressmen, senators are listening to the polls? Is it that because people in general don't want women serving in those branches?
Well, Jerry, I think it's a combination of all of those factors. And again, like we talked about with World War II and how necessity created opportunities for women, I think that that has played a part in terms of people now seeing what women are able to do. The whole story of Specialist Monica Brown winning the Silver Star. 10 years ago, there probably would have been discussion that women didn't have the physical strength, or maybe 20 years, 10 years maybe is too recent, that women didn't have the physical strength to get their buddies off the battlefield and the emotional fortitude to perform under fire. And Monica Brown, a 19-year-old PFC at the time, pretty much dispelled that. So I think as we have more exposure to the great things that women are doing, and you also have to consider the kind of battlefield that we're in now. 20 years ago, we still were looking at a linear battlefield where there was a clearly defined front line. That's not the occasion now. So even though women are prohibited from serving in units or positions with a primary mission of direct ground combat, by the nature of the conflicts that we're in, they find themselves in those situations even though that's not their primary mission. And they have responded with great courage, great selflessness, just the very best of the Army, what you expect of any soldier. And so I think over time, our society, which again, who elects Congress, who oversees the military, along with, you know, the president and the appointees that are made so that we have civilian leadership of our military, over time, our experience and the recognition of what women are capable of doing, what they are doing, I think we're seeing that change. But it's hard to get a gauge on, and you know, I think we do reflect our society, but we also see society take in what women are doing and recognize that maybe there were limitations that don't need to be there.
Yeah, I'm going to Roger what you said about women being physically able to handle their jobs. My last embed in Afghanistan, I spent a lot of time with medevac crews, and we had a woman medic on the crew, on a medevac crew, and I got to tell you, that job is physically demanding. Not only did she have to wear all of her combat gear, but, you know, get outside the bird and be able to help put the injured person on the aircraft. You know, there is a lot of physical work there, not only physically tough, but extremely mentally tough. It's just a very hard job mentally dealing with injured people day in, day out, and I was so impressed with her. Now, we have some poll numbers here. 72% of the American public favor women serving anywhere in Iraq. 67%